Thanks to Indeed for supporting the Productivity Show. Indeed is the hiring platform where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. So don't spend hours on multiple job sites looking for candidates with the right skills when you can do it all with Indeed. Visit Indeed.com/TPS to start hiring now. Terms and conditions apply, and cost per application pricing is not available for everyone. Thanks also to Avast for supporting the podcast. With Avast One, you can confidently take control of your online world by helping you stay safe from viruses, phishing attacks, ransomware, hacking attempts, and other cybercrimes. Learn more about Avast One at avast.com. We'd also like to thank Bambi for supporting the Productivity Show. With Bambi, you get access to your own dedicated HR manager starting at just $99 a month. They're available by phone, email, and real-time chat, so onboarding and terminations run smoothly, and your business stays compliant with changing HR regulations. So go to Bambi.com/TPS to schedule your free conversation to see how much Bambi can take off your plate.
Welcome to The Productivity Show, a podcast where we believe that you can get everything done without having to sacrifice your health, family, and things that matter to you. My name is Tam Pham. I'm the founder and CEO of Asian Efficiency, where we help people become more productive at work and in life. And normally, I'm joined by my co-host, Brooks Duncan, but he's not here today because I have a special guest replacing Brooks here today. His name is Art Cardin. He's the professor of economics at Stanford's University's Brock School of Business, and his research has appeared in many publications such as Business Ethics Quarterly, the Journal of Urban Economics, Applied Economics, Public Choice, among many others. And he's also the author of the book Leave Me Alone and I'll Make You Rich, How the Bourgeois Deal Enriched the World. And he's also a client of Asian Efficiency and has joined a few of our programs, and I wanted to bring Art on today to share his workflows, how he gets stuff done, and his best productivity strategies. So whether you're new to productivity or already advanced, there's something in it for you here today. Welcome, Art.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited for us to kind of dive into what you do, what you're up to, how you do things. But as a Productivity Show listener as well, you know, we always like to start off with our top three favorite resources. And since you are the guest today, what are some of your favorite resources as of lately?
Yeah, so favorite resources as of lately, the first one is Freedom.2. I have been a Freedom.2 subscriber for several years now. Right around the beginning of the pandemic, I set it up so that it basically blocked me off of news websites and social media, except for like a small window every day. And that helps to keep me on the straight and narrow. So big fan of web blockers generally and Freedom.2 specifically. Second resource that I've been using is the Harvard Classics, which I guess they're all in the public domain now, because you can pay for $1.99 to get an entire 71-volume set on your Kindle. So sat down and thought, okay, you know what? I'm not sure what I need to read next. So let's just start at page one. And we'll see how far I get into all this. Third sort of app tool resource I've been using is our dog. We got a black lab right around the beginning of the pandemic. I let the kids convince me that we needed to get a dog. And now I refer to her as my personal trainer. She keeps me up in the morning and makes sure that I get plenty of exercise. So it's kind of I'm not sure if you call it a productivity resource, but it's definitely helped a lot.
I love it. I'm sure the dog has helped quite a bit in terms of increasing your step count every single day.
Yes, absolutely.
And how about the rabbit? Is there still a rabbit in the household?
Yes. Yeah. We do have a rabbit. The rabbit takes care of a lot of the vegetable matter that comes out of the kitchen. And we have a screened in back porch where the rabbit just kind of hangs out all day, every day, and just sort of chew stuff up and is there when you need to kind of go and pet something fuzzy. So the rabbit is also a good productivity resource, but didn't make the cut because the rabbit doesn't really contribute to the step count.
That's right. Well, we'll have links to all of that here in the show notes, excluding a link to the dog. But Art, most people who come to Asian Efficiency come because they struggle with productivity. They want to be more efficient. So they're not as productive as they could be. I'm curious to hear what's your story behind just learning about productivity, how you got started, and what inspired you to do this.
So I really dove in around February of 2006. So I'd always been kind of a productive person, you know, got a lot done, blah, 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 blah. I read like Seven Habits of Highly Effective People and a few other things. But I realized a few months before I defended my dissertation in graduate school that like I had sort of bottomed out in terms of my ability to manage everything that's coming at me. And I thought, you know, I need to listen to some time management podcasts. And actually looked up time management podcast, actually found one called The Productivity Show. This is before the AE Productivity Show, but listened to it. The guest was a guy named Jason Womack, who I've gotten to be really, really good friends with over the years. At the time, he was working for the David Allen Company. I went out, bought David Allen's books, bought a labeler, bought a bunch of file folders, and implemented GTD imperfectly at the time, and still imperfectly, but that kind of really got me on the journey because it was a revelation for me insofar as I'd never really thought about, like I never really thought about my work that way. Like I never really thought that much about managing my time, managing my energy, managing my attention, you know, to I guess coin a phrase. That really got me into it. And I started reading more, started recommending more. The more I recommended it, the more I started thinking, yeah, gosh, I guess I've got a few things to say. So I started writing for a couple of different places. And yeah, that's how I became, that's kind of how I became a productive guy and sort of a productivity junkie.
So as you were discovering GTD and other methods and lessons from other people, what have you tried in the past that maybe worked for you but also didn't work for you?
Writing a to-do list without a really, really clear notion of just how long it's going to take me to do something and how much energy I'm going to have. So I think specifically about that academic year, 2005-2006, I remember buying a notepad and like every day I would write down, you know, from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. I'm going to work on this paper. Then from 10 a.m. to noon, I'm going to work on this paper. Then for whatever. And without realizing, you know, I'm not going to be able to sustain that kind of concentration for 2 hours, much less in 4 or 5 or 6 consecutive 2 hour blocks. So that didn't work. Staying up late didn't really work. Yeah, sort of the standard kinds of things that people try: putting in extra hours, drinking more coffee, just trying to brute force it. And none of that really worked that well. Then also putting things on my calendar when there isn't really a clear due date. Saying, okay, I'm going to work from this time to this time on this thing, and like block my calendar so it all looks beautiful, and play calendar Tetris, and it's going to be great. But then when the time comes, a lot of times I've got something else I need to work on. Yeah, I've tried a lot of things and I've implemented a lot. Most of it's worked, but yeah, there've been a few things that haven't really worked so well.
I find that everyone that is trying to become more productive, more effective, has to almost go through this rite of passage of trying different things that work for them and figure out what ends up working for them in the best way possible in their current situation. So you've tried a lot of different things. What is working for you now?
Things that are working for me now. One, I've turned off all of my auto notifications on all of my devices. So in think about ways of managing my attention. I tell my students, like, if it comes in via email, then it is by definition not urgent. Or if it comes in on a text or Facebook or whatever, it's by definition not urgent. And usually it's really not even important. So I don't have a whole lot of things screaming at me at all times. And I've really been working in the last several weeks, especially on better managing my projects in OmniFocus. And so like when I do my OmniFocus weekly review, it's like I feel like a weight is lifted off my shoulders because I know that all my stuff had like, it's got its place, it's got its, they've got the due dates, everything like that. And then that frees me up to take care of the stuff that needs to be done.
So when it comes to your OmniFocus, mm-hmm. what does that look like?
So not long ago, I actually created a weekly review project in OmniFocus. And so I've gone through that a few times, and having it like there in front of me with like a tick list to say, okay, I'd get clear. I forget all the steps, but like get clear, get current, whatever, with all the little sub steps, knowing I don't have to think about that. Like I've outsourced that bit of cognitive burden to my software. And also knowing that it's going to remind me of what I need to do when I need to do it. So like while I was going through the OmniFocus thing or going through the weekly review, one of the steps is about getting clear. So put all your paper stuff into your in-basket or whatever. And one of my steps in OmniFocus is check wallet, because like we all have bunches of receipts and bits of paper and things like that in our wallets. Another one is check backpack. And I wouldn't have done that if I didn't have that in OmniFocus. And then my OmniFocus setup is imperfect, but probably pretty good, where I have folders arranged by like all of my like writing and speaking things, travel and conferences, personal stuff. And I try to arrange all of my tasks accordingly. And that means that I get to spend more time actually doing my work and less time thinking about it. And I know that's a really, really big deal in the productivity community.
Yeah. Was it easy for you to get there, or did you go through the rite of passage as well, trying to figure out, okay, I'm going to tweak my OmniFocus. This is going to take forever. It's always changing. It's always adjusting.
It's always changing, always adjusting. So I remember hearing a preacher one time say, like, someone asked him, like, what's the best translation of the Bible? And he said, it's the one that you read. And I feel the same way about productivity software, the same way about productivity methods. Embrace the fact that an imperfect system imperfectly implemented is way better than a perfect system you don't use. Or an imperfect piece of software is way better than a perfect piece of software you don't use. And I've tried a handful of different task managers, but since about a year ago, I dove into OmniFocus because I work almost exclusively in the Apple ecosystem, and decided I wanted something that worked with Apple products the way that I want things to work with Apple products. And I've been very happy with OmniFocus.
So earlier you mentioned that you do a lot of writing, you do a lot of research. How do you organize your writing, your papers, your information? Because I know a lot of people who listen to the show want to either become a published author. They are scholars or academics themselves. They do a lot of writing in some shape or form. And one of the most frequent questions we get is, one, how do you get so much writing done? And then two, how do you organize all your research and information?
So first I'll start with just the organizing research and information. I'm a big fan of using tags, really big fan of using tags, both in Evernote and on my hard drive. So I have through Sanford, I've got a OneDrive account. I've also got a Dropbox set of Dropbox folders that I share with other collaborators that aren't on OneDrive or that aren't at Sanford. And then Evernote tends to be a dumping ground, honestly. But also, when I need information, I tag it all so that I can call it. If I've got to write something about, say, Sam Walton, who is the guy who founded Walmart, I can just look for the Sam Walton tag in Evernote, and there's all my stuff. Or I can look for the Sam Walton tag, or hit Command Spacebar Sam Walton. Everything I've got that's tagged Sam Walton comes up. So I'm working toward that working the way that I want it to. I organize my information with tags. And something I've learned recently in some of the AE stuff has been about naming conventions. So I've gotten better with my naming conventions, and it's made it a lot easier for stuff. It's made it a lot easier for me to find things. So just a one example, recently I was looking for something I'd written years ago, and after searching for it, I finally found it, and it's just titled adamsmithpaper.pdf. And it's like, hey, that's cool, but utterly useless. So I retitled it, you know, something like Adam, the Serenity and System in Smith and Hayek, which I think is the title of the paper, and then a few other keywords, and tagged it. Now, if I want to find it, it's a lot easier to find.
I love that. And one of the things we talked about in the course, Easy Organization System, which you're a part of as well, is when you're naming something, you always want to think about, what would future you think of? What would future you write down and search for? And it takes maybe an extra 1 or 2 seconds to take that step, but it makes your life so much easier down the line, because you end up saving probably 5 to 10 minutes, if not more.
Yeah. So I literally just hit Command Spacebar Serenity and System, and the first thing that came up was that paper that I'd spent so much time looking for. So thank you, past me, for having made that a lot easier.
So do you do your writing in Evernote as well, or is just the research stored in Evernote?
The research is stored in Evernote. I use Zotero as well as a citations manager. You can make notes in Zotero. I'm not really sure that I'm using it the way that I should, but pretty much all of my writing happens in Word or in Google Drive. So one of the organizations I write for, they work in Google Docs. So almost all of my pop articles, at the very least, they start in Google Drive. My academic stuff, kind of a combination of Google Drive and Microsoft Word. That's kind of where it all goes. And I tend to be a bit of an information pack rat. So I can, if I need to find something, and if I know that I've got stuff strewn across several different places. I tend not to throw things away. Right? I tend not to throw away information. I will have a set of Evernotes and then a bunch of documents in an archive folder and a bunch of blah, 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 so that if I want to learn more about, or if I need to do something more about, again, so Adam Smith or whatever, I can just search across a handful of different places and I've got all of my material.
So one of the things I wanted to ask you is, as you went through our course, EOS, which teaches people how to organize their files, notes, and photos, you probably already had a huge backlog of thousands of things in there. So a lot of people struggle with the idea that, hey, you know what? I don't want to start organizing because I have so much in my backlog that I will just never get up to speed. Did you have that feeling?
Yeah. Yeah. Tasks tend to feel really, really overwhelming. And it's so cliched, but if you can break something down into smaller little chunks, then it's going to be so much easier to do. Or in the case of something like trying ways to rename and reorganize files, say, okay, look, I'm going to sit down and watch an episode of the Book of Boba Fett or whatever. And while I'm doing that, I'm going to sit and rename a bunch of stuff. Or, oh, I've got 5 minutes, I'm going to rename some files. It looks really, really, really overwhelming. But in particular for academics, one of the problems that we have is we don't really have due dates in the conventional sense. Obviously, we've got to show up for our classes and things like that. But for the most part, like, you get your first job and it's sort of like, okay, you know, we'll see in 5 years when it's time for you to submit your tenure file. That can feel really, really, really overwhelming. And any project that we do is going to feel really overwhelming. But again, if you can break into small industry chunks, it's really going to matter, or it's really going to work well. And with something like organizing, to say, I'm just going to do this one folder, or I'm just going to do this one set of documents that's tagged this way, or I'm just going to fiddle with this one Hazel rule and do it in little bits and bits and bits and bits. I know you guys talk about Kaizen, the Japanese Toyota perpetual improvement thing. Eventually you've gotten somewhere where you've done something major. As a result of the Easy Organization System class, I know Brooks has done a lot of tutorials on Hazel. And so I bought Hazel a little over a year ago and have messed around with it a little bit and kind of liked it. And then finally, about last week or 2 weeks ago, figured out a rule that is going to save me hours and hours and hours and hours of time that I would otherwise spend digging around in my library folder. So it didn't do it perfectly exact. It didn't do literally everything I wanted it to do, but it shrunk the amount of actual work I need to do now by an order of magnitude. It was a big win.
I mean, everyone that's listening, including myself, is now thinking, Art, what is this rule?
So I have all of my like academic PDFs, journal articles, and things like that that I need to read in this folder z.library. And when you download an academic PDF, it usually comes with a title that's just useless. It's like just a string of numbers, or it's like I don't know how many different documents I had named Content Server 1, Content Server 2, just utterly useless. But I created a rule to rename all the documents with the metadata that's attached to the PDF. So for a lot of the PDFs, it's got like the title of the article, it'll have the author of the article, it'll have keywords and things like that in the metadata. And so I created a Hazel rule that said, search through this library and rename every PDF with title, author, and then whatever, you know, keywords or something like that. And it took, gosh, I don't know how many thousands of papers and whatnot, and it fixed all of them. And I've still got like a bunch that I need to go back through and kind of fill in the metadata so I can run the rule again and get it complete. But something that was, I was thinking, I don't know how I'm going to do this. And it turned into, oh, that's now almost done. And importantly, the additional work that I need to do is something I can like outsource to my 13-year-old. So I told him, I said recently, hey, I've got a job for you if you want to make some money. Basically, I'm just going to say, open these in this app and change this, change this, change this. Do that for a few hours and you're done. And then click run the rule and we're good.
I really love that. I recently had a client who was in a very similar situation, but he had to go through a backlog of probably thousands of photos. Because, yes, you have metadata, but oftentimes you also have to look at the photos and kind of see what's actually in there. And so long story short, the recommendation I had for him was, hey, if you want to start categorizing stuff, instead of doing it yourself, hire like a cousin or a niece or maybe even your own kids to help you with that, because it is, part of it is a manual process. And sometimes you can get lucky based on the metadata in terms of if there's a geolocation in there, for example, then you can use that and say, okay, let's tag all these photos or rename them based on location and so on, right? But the more we can group stuff together, the faster things will become in terms of organization.
And I think the point you make about like having a niece do it or a nephew do it or having a member of the family do it or something like that is really important, because I outsource a lot of stuff. I outsource a lot of stuff. And in the case of something like this, it's something that, again, like I said, my kids can do, and I will happily pay them to do it. Or something I can have students or student workers do some stuff. My 13-year-old I mentioned a minute ago, he's actually credited in a paper that's forthcoming for his research assistants, because over the summer I said, okay, look, I need you to, like, here's all this stuff that I've searched for on the library website. I need you to go through all of these. And if it's about what I think it's about, then clip it to Evernote and add these tags. And so we did that for however many hours and got paid. And now that's a bunch of work I didn't have to do, so that I could focus on the stuff that I can do. You know, the expression, only do what only you can do. It can be surprising sometimes how you can find, or where you can find, really, really, really good help if you know where to look.
Isn't it amazing what impact hiring the right person can have? It just makes everything so much better. All of a sudden, you can focus on the things you want to focus on because you know you have the right person in the right role. Well, if you're hiring, you need Indeed, because Indeed is the hiring platform where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. And instead of spending hours on multiple job sites just hoping and usually failing to find candidates with the right skills, Indeed is a powerful hiring partner that can help you do it all. You can find top talent fast with time-saving tools like Indeed Instant Match, assessments, and virtual interviews. And if you hate waiting, I mean, I definitely do, Indeed's U.S. data shows that over 80% of Indeed employers find quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed matches their job description the moment they sponsor a job, like pretty much right away. If you want to hire the right people, you have to attract the right people, of course, and that's why I like Indeed's Instant Match feature. Again, Indeed tracks all this stuff. They have so much hiring data, and according to their data, candidates you invite to apply through Instant Match are 3 times more likely to apply to your job than candidates who just see it in a search. So you can get your job in front of the right people at the right time. So join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Indeed knows that when you're doing everything for your company, you can't afford to overspend on hiring. So visit Indeed.com/TPS to start hiring now. Just go to Indeed.com/TPS. That's Indeed.com/TPS. Terms and conditions apply, and cost per application pricing is not available for everyone. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Every time you read tech news, it just seems like there's yet another way that hackers and cyber criminals are invading our privacy and our data. It's more important than ever to be protected, and that's why there's Avast. Avast is a global leader in cyber protection for more than 30 years, is trusted by over 435 million users, and prevents over 1.5 billion, with a B, attacks every month. Avast empowers you with digital safety and privacy no matter who you are, where you are, or how you connect. So enjoy the opportunities that come with being connected, but on your terms. Avast's new all-in-one solution, Avast One, helps you take control of your safety and privacy online through just a whole range of features. And because Avast believes essential protection should be available to everyone, a free version of Avast One still includes award-winning free antivirus, free VPN, free firewall, and just much, much more. And that's all in their free package. Of course, there's also a premium version that has even more advanced protection and lets you protect multiple devices. So why should you choose Avast? Well, there's privacy features to help you keep your identity and your actions hidden. Even if you think you have nothing to hide, people are still after your data. Avast security solutions stop malware, phishing, and virus attacks. And Avast performance products clean up and speed up your devices. Like if your computer seems like it's getting slower and slower, Avast has their PC speed up feature that optimizes the background activity of your apps to speed things up. I have Avast running on my Windows PC and it works well. I like feeling protected, and it has this online safety score that lets me know if there's anything I can do to improve my digital habits. Thankfully, I'm excellent apparently, which is nice. So thanks to Avast for supporting the Productivity Show. confidently take control of your online world with Avast One. It helps you stay safe from viruses, phishing attacks, ransomware, hacking attempts, and other cybercrimes. Learn more about Avast One at avast.com. If you start or manage a business, you'll quickly find out that there's just all sorts of situations with employees that you never could have imagined you'd have to deal with. Like, what do you do if people complain that someone on your team smells bad? You know, it happens, and you're probably thinking to yourself, that is not what I signed up for when I started this business. And if you have a big HR department, great, but most of us aren't big enough for that. And in that case, you'd better talk to Bambi. With Bambi, get access to your own dedicated HR manager starting at just $99 a month. They're reachable by phone, email, and even real-time chat, so onboarding and terminations run smoothly, team members reach peak performance, and most importantly, your business stays compliant with all the HR regulations that are just changing all the time. And with Bambi's HR autopilot, you'll automate important HR practices like setting policies, training, and feedback. Bambi, which is spelled B-A-M-B-E-E, was created specifically for small business. You can get a dedicated HR manager, craft HR policy, and maintain your compliance, all for just $99 a month. With Bambi, you can change HR from your biggest liability to your biggest strength, just like that. Like I said before, your dedicated HR manager is available by phone, email, or real-time chat. So from onboarding to terminations, they customize your policies to fit your business and help you manage your employees day-to-day, all for just $99 a month. And it's month-to-month, there's no hidden fees, and you can just cancel anytime. The HR managers that they use are all US-based and are dedicated to your business. They'll know what your challenges are and how to give you HR expertise and the personal touch that you need. They're not just going to throw you a knowledge base article that doesn't apply to you or something like that. If you hire a full-time HR person, it could easily cost $80,000 a year, but with Bambi, it just starts at $99 a month. So schedule your free conversation today and see how much Bambi can take off your plate. Visit Bambi.com/TPS right now. That's spelled Bambi.com/TPS. That's Bambi.com/TPS.
So it sounds like you have pretty good clarity about what you do best and what everything else can be done by others. So how would you sort of summarize only things you can do, and how did you get to the point where you were comfortable saying, hey, I'm going to give this to someone else?
Oh gosh, that's a tough one. A lot of my writing is stuff that like only I can do, because I've got all this training and all this stuff I put together, so I can do the thinking, right, and figure out how it all kind of fits together. A lot of other stuff that I can outsource would be something like editing. So Grammarly Pro, and I know we talk about resources here, getting Grammarly Pro was a fantastic investment for me, because first, it showed me how much I can do my own prose. And second, it's just something I can run through relatively quickly and improve the quality of what I've written without having to send it to somebody and wait for it to come back and things like that. So there's a lot of times it's kind of, you kind of have to go with your gut on what you can and can't delegate to somebody else. And sometimes it blows up. I used to have a virtual assistant, and she was fantastic. So this should in no way, shape, or form be an indictment of virtual assistants. But I went to a conference, and a student was supposed to join me at a conference. And my student called and said, hey, I'm at this airport like 3 hours away because some wires had gotten crossed and some reservations had gotten made incorrectly. So I had to go rent a car, drive and pick up my student and things like that. But yeah, you need to eventually kind of develop an intuition for it. One thing I've been fairly successful with is as more academic research has become collaborative, I've gotten pretty good at assembling teams of people to make stuff happen. So for example, I've got a handful of articles that were just sort of like ideas I had and scribbled about a little bit. And then they just sort of sat for a while. And then I was able to find people and put together groups of co-authors, say, for example, to make a few things happen. And again, that's sometimes it works well, sometimes it works poorly. I have a pretty good batting average, I think.
So Art, if we had to go back 15 years when you were just starting off as an academic, And knowing what you know now about being efficient, being effective, being productive, what would you tell your younger self?
Oh my gosh, so many things I would tell my younger self. So my younger self was pretty good at not having auto notifications on, pretty good at getting to inbox zero. Let's see here. One thing I would say is pay for the pro version. For a lot of the stuff that you're looking at, a lot of the stuff you're playing with, go ahead and pay for the pro version. If your time is worth $50 an hour, then $5 to save 6 minutes is a great deal. I would also say sort of more clearly, just do the darn thing. You know, whatever it is that you're trying to do, know that a good system imperfectly implemented is better than a perfect system you don't use. So don't worry about whether or not this task manager or that task manager is going to be best, or you just pick one and go with it. But yeah, those are a couple of things. Definitely a couple of things I would say to myself. Another thing I would say is, like, it's going to be okay. Just, it's going to be all right. You're going to, you've got plenty of time to get your work done. If you're disciplined about what you say yes to and what you say no to, then you're going to look back in 15 years and say, what was I so worried about?
Before we started recording, we were talking about how, I'm fascinated why so many scholars and academics need productivity tips and strategies. And the thing you mentioned was, well, technically, you don't really have a boss who tells you what to do. And there's like no structure because you can kind of do what you want to do. And that seems to be very challenging for many people.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, I've got a dean, I've got a department chair. But like, I don't have to check in every day. I don't have to, if I want to work from home, I just work from home. Obviously I've got to show up for classes and show up for office hours and show up for committee meetings and things of that nature. But for the most part, you know, in academia, your time is your own and you work on more or less whatever you want to work on, whatever you think is interesting. And that's fantastic if you're good at making yourself work. Say sometimes even when you don't want to, if you need a lot of structure, if you need a lot of direction, then it can be really, really difficult. So I think one of the reasons why a lot of academics like myself end up digging into this space is because so much of what we need to do is stuff that we ourselves are responsible for. Like, for example, when I write a paper and I want to submit it to a journal, I don't have to send it to my department chair, I don't have to send it to my dean. I just submit it to the journal. And I rarely, if ever, have people telling me what I need to be working on. And again, that's going to be true for a lot of academics. So with the intellectual freedom and with the sort of ability to basically do whatever you want, whenever you want to do it, comes the problem of finding ways to impose structure on all of that yourself. And I think that's definitely one of the reasons why I got into this. I remember when I was finishing my dissertation and just thinking, you know, I've got no idea what I'm doing. Like at like a very, very, very high level, like I don't know how to manage my life. And furthermore, I'm going to go into this position where, you know, I have some structure, but for the most part, I'm going to be responsible for a lot of my own stuff. I need to really get serious about this.
So how do you structure your day now then?
How do I structure my day now? So the first thing I do, I get up, make coffee and walk the dog. So Lucy and I will go on a walk that is, you know, usually 30 to 45 minutes or so, listen to a podcast or two. A lot of times we'll walk around the pond at the local park, or since that's been kind of a mess recently, I've been just sort of walking around different neighborhoods around town. Do that, walk the dog, come home, vigorously exercised, have breakfast, get cleaned up, hang out with my wife and the kids. On days when I go to campus, a lot of times I'll drop off my daughter and younger son at school on my way into work. On days when I'm working from home, I'll just kind of go directly into the home office here. And I'm usually kind of at my desk and getting stuff done around 9-ish, which is there's a lot of time between when I walk the dog and when I actually start doing that. But a lot of, I'll check email or sometimes I'll sit down and get a good solid 30 minutes of serious work done. But then like the work day usually is roughly from about 9-ish to about 6-ish. So a little bit of time for lunch in between. On my teaching days, of course, I've got office hours, got to prep for my classes, go teach my classes, et cetera. My research days, you know, a lot of times it depends on whatever I just happen to be working on. I try to write every day, but my writing is streaky. I've been on a bit of a dry spell, honestly, for the last little bit, but generally try to write every day. And then when I come home, we have dinner around the table as a family. We all talk about our day. It's very, very idyllic, I suppose. And like, I have the evenings to look forward to say, okay, I know that when I get home, we're going to have dinner, and I know what we're going to have for dinner, and I know what dinner is going to look like. And then we're usually going to watch something on TV. And then after we're done watching whatever it is we're going to watch, we'll read for a while. So my wife and I will round robin read to each of the kids. And then usually by that point, it's probably 8:30-ish. And we're pretty much all in bed by 9. And then we get up the next day and start it all again. I am very much a creature of habit, very much a creature of routine. And knowing that, okay, I'm going to wake up and like, I can't look the dog in the eye and say, sorry, not today. No, we're not going to go on our walk today. I can't do that. So she keeps me exercised in the mornings. And then knowing what the evenings are going to look like helps a lot when like I start to look around and kind of freak out a bit and say, oh my gosh, I don't know. What do the next 24 hours look like? Say, okay, well, I know that come hell or high water, you know, it's on the calendar that we're having pork ramen tonight, and the new episode of Book of Boba Fett is out. So that's what we're going to watch. And then I know what I'm reading with the kids and stuff like that.
So a common question I get for people like you, and including myself as well, is when we're so into this, we're so aware of how to be productive, how to be efficient, that we obviously almost see it everywhere else now, where some people are not as productive as they could be. And maybe they're not as obsessed as we are. So I'm curious, is your wife into this stuff at all? Do you talk to her about this?
We do. She has a sort of a different system, though. And she's very productive in her own way. She doesn't like use OmniFocus or listen to productivity podcasts or read productivity books or things like that. But she's extraordinarily disciplined about how she manages her responsibilities within the house. She, over the last couple of years, has started a couple of businesses. She is sort of like a utility infielder teacher now for a kid's school, which is kind of neat. And she is very, very good at making sure that like our Amazon Subscribe and Save is exactly fixed up with everything that she needs and everything that she wants it to be, and making sure that she knows what kind of food is coming in and things of that nature. So she's not a productivity junkie, certainly. But she is also somebody who is pretty well organized. Like in some sense, it's sort of like there are people who are naturals and who just don't really need it and don't need the podcast and the books and things like that. Then there's the rest of us who have to be really, really deliberate about it. She's more in the former camp and I'm more in the latter.
Mm. So do you guys use a shared calendar at all? Like, how do you guys sync up?
Yeah, we do use a shared calendar, somewhat imperfectly. I need to actually fix our calendar settings right now. But so, for example, if I look at the calendar right now, call up the calendar on my iCal, I've got all of my stuff. So the podcast we're doing right now, kids' dental appointment, what we're having for dinner tonight, we got a church thing tonight, stuff like that. So we use a shared calendar to try not to get our wires crossed.
So when you are making plans or she's making plans, you're referring to the calendar first? Is that kind of how it works?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, that's the first place I'll look. I'll look and see, okay, so does the calendar actually have, or is there anything on the calendar for this time? And then I will confirm it with my wife because, again, like I said, sometimes something slips, something doesn't end up on the right calendar. Like I said, I need to look at our settings right now. But check and then confirm, and that has dramatically reduced the frequency with which we end up double booked.
Amazing, because I wish more families use a shared calendar, and I know some people have maybe a significant other where that is maybe more of a challenge. But I think the upside is so high that if there's any possibility for anyone that's listening to use a shared calendar, it will just save so many headaches down the line.
Something else that's really good too, and on the subject of shared calendars, is if you can have like one big visual calendar that everyone can look at. So we have like a whiteboard calendar on the fridge, and every month my wife will go in and, okay, so it's January, list out all the days, And then here's all of the big stuff. Like I know in one of the DTDTs in the Productivity Academy, you guys talked about anchors. So basically what my wife will do is she'll put all the anchors on the calendar. But like, so, okay, these are the days that grandpa's coming over. This is when we're going to wherever. This is when dad's going to be in New Orleans, you know, stuff like that. So we can, when we're in the kitchen or at dinner, just at a quick glance, sort of see what do the next couple of weeks look like. And I've sort of taken that for granted. I just sort of assume that everybody does that. And it kind of surprises me when I learned they don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Art, I really enjoyed this conversation that we're having, and I'm sure we can talk forever.
Undoubtedly. But
I know time is limited. Just to wrap things up here, I'm curious, just me being the guy behind Asian Efficiency, what has Asian Efficiency done for you, or what has the Productivity Show done for you?
What has it done for me? So what have I learned? So I actually made a quick list. So first, while listening to the podcast a couple of months ago, I think it was a Monday or whatever, and I'm driving to work and you said something about flights and I realized, oh crap, I'm flying out tonight. So like at lunchtime today, I need to go home and pack and I need to make sure that I go to the airport, you know, after I'm done. So right there, reminding me that I had a trip it was on the calendar for whatever reason, I was forgetting about it. So that was a good value add. It was one of the planning DTDTs. I realized just how much stuff I didn't have on the list. So being able to build out the list is a little bit better. If I were to pick three major things that have big value adds, then first would be learning better naming conventions for easy searchability and how to make Hazel rules. Second thing is I know Brooks in one of the forums posted a trick he did with his vaccine card to basically have it so he has it like on his iPhone home screen, just clicks it and you can show the vaccine card. That helped me not terribly long ago. And then not having fake deadlines is something that's been a bit of a revelation, because I always had a bad habit of saying, okay, my deadline is March 1st or whatever, but that's not really a deadline. Like March 1st rolls around and I just say, okay, well, I'm going to do it later. You know, no, like April 15th, like that's a freaking deadline for tax stuff and things like that. So when I was building out all of my get the taxes done projects in OmniFocus, the deadlines were not, I would like to have this done by March 1st. It was, you know, if it's not done, all the deadlines are April 15th, because if it's not done by April 15th, then the IRS starts coming. And not having fake deadlines and knowing that the deadlines I see in OmniFocus and in the calendar and things like that, these are real deadlines with teeth, has again freed up a lot of interesting mental space.
Wow, that's amazing. Thank you for sharing that. If people want to learn more about you, what you're up to, what's next on the horizon for you?
I have a new book coming out sometime in 2022 with the American Institute for Economic Research, for whom I do some work. It's called Strangers with Candy: Observations from the Ordinary Business of Life, and it's basically a collection of revised articles that I've written for AIER.org. My website is artcarden.com, which I need to update, and now that we are having this conversation, that might actually be the thing that induces me to do the updates that I need to do. That's where you can find kind of like links to all of my stuff. And I Google pretty easily, just Art Carden or Art Carden Economics. And you can find a bunch of things I've written for academic journals, a bunch of things I've written for the popular press, things like that. And I'm pretty easy to get in touch with. So that's where you can find out more of what I've got going on and read the things that I've written.
We'll have links to all of that here in the show notes, so don't worry if you missed that. Art, thank you so much again for sharing all the wisdom, and I appreciate you being here today. And thanks everyone else for listening as well, and hope you join us again next Monday, and talk to you then.